Hello, and welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America, designed for people like you who are learning American English. Every day of the year on this program, we bring you news from and about the United States and the world. Because this program is produced for learners of American English, like you, we speak a little slower than normal, and we use words and phrases that are easy to understand. Listen to the program, then practice saying the words and sentences the way we do. It's a free and easy way to improve your American English skills every day of the year. This is what you will hear on today's program. In our weekly higher education report, correspondent Pete Musto will tell us about student activism on college campuses. Then you will hear Words and Their Stories, one of our most popular programs. This week, Anna Mateo will tell us about the American English expression, drink the Kool-Aid. And finally, as we do every Sunday, we will present The Making of a Nation. This week in our series, Steve Ember will tell us about the presidential election of 1988. So, you can see, as always, we have a lot for you today. So, let's get started. Here's higher education correspondent Pete Musto.
Millennials is a term that describes the current generation of 18 to 35-year-olds. They have faced criticism for rejecting behavior and beliefs of previous generations. But passion for political involvement is one quality that has not been lost. In 2016, the Higher Education Research Institute at the University of California, Los Angeles, reported on the opinions of over 141,000 first-time college students. The study found 1 in 10 students expected to be involved in some kind of protest during their college career. However, not all students' political involvement looks the same. Cassie Cleary is from Wakefield, Massachusetts, a small town outside of Boston. The 21-year-old says politics was not often a topic of conversation among her friends growing up. Her high school had no student political groups that she knew of. In her second year at Syracuse University in New York, the political science and history student learned of a group called Democracy Matters. The national organization works to prevent private corporations from giving money to election campaigns. Cleary was concerned about the 2010 Supreme Court decision on campaign finance. The decision allows businesses and groups to spend unlimited amounts of money on political campaigns. So she became a leader for her school's chapter of Democracy Matters. As chapter leader, Cleary plans meetings, invites guest speakers, and even investigates sources of private donations to her university. She also organizes actions like getting students to call their representatives in Congress to express their concerns. Cleary sees her generation's knowledge of technology and social media as a special tool for change.
Let's be honest, we have more time than the average person because we're not working, we don't have kids. So I think if we can get really involved in the backbone of these movements, we can move them forward so much more. We have so much more to commit, and we have the energy to do it.
Wiley Compress, 21, is originally from Moca in the Dominican Republic. Like Cleary, Compress had little involvement in politics in his younger days. He says that as in the U.S., political discussion in his country can be very divisive. People often avoid it, he says. In 2012, Compress and his family moved to New York City, where he attended an all-Latino high school. There, he began to learn he and his fellow students shared similar experiences of discrimination as Latinos and immigrants. After graduating, Compress began looking for a university that served his interests as a member of these communities. He learned of Bard College, a few hours north of the city. The school was home to La Voz, a publication designed to share news and information for the Spanish speakers in the area. Compress became involved with La Voz and worked with members of the community outside the college. The philosophy student wants to connect Latino immigrants with helpful resources. He also wants to change negative attitudes some Americans have about immigrants. Between 2012 and 2016, several deaths of African American men at the hands of police drew national attention. To show his support, Compress started a Bard chapter of the Million Hoodies Movement for Justice. This is a national student human rights organization aiming to end police violence against African Americans and other minorities. But as Compress becomes more involved, he notes many students feel they only have time for activism while they are students. Every 4 years, he says,
they leave, the activism stops, another generation comes, it happens again, it stops, and so on. So I think that our main goal right now is how do we keep this going?
Cade Marsh says he did form strong political opinions at an early age. Marsh is from San Diego, California. He calls himself a standard conservative, believing in limited government, personal freedom, and individual responsibility. Marsh began studying law at Palm Beach Atlantic University in Florida in 2014. At the time, there was a midterm election for members of Congress. Marsh was unhappy with how the government was being run, and he felt that politicians have not appealed to younger voters.
As my generation is spoken to less, and as our opinions are taken and reflected by our elected officials less, we are even less likely to come out and vote. That sort of trend can only last so long, though, because at the end of the day, we've started to reject standard political campaign communication and have started connecting peer-to-peer.
In early 2015, Marsh wanted to test his abilities as a leader. So he decided to join his school's chapter of the College Republicans. created in 1892, this national organization works to get students to join the Republican political party and support conservative goals. Marsh worked hard to share information about his political party. By the fall, Marsh gathered 500 new members to his group. He also became the executive director of the Florida College Republican Federation. He even created his own political action committee called Campus Red Pack in 2016. The group raised over $100,000 to help share Republican messages at Florida colleges and register new voters. Marsh graduated in early 2017, but he says his political activism is not over. He plans to continue his involvement throughout his life. And Marsh says he will encourage any children he has in the future to be politically active as well. He believes young people will always be a major force for change. I'm Pete Musto.
Thanks, Pete. Now, here's Anna Mateo.
Hello, and welcome to another Words and Their Stories from VOA Learning English. Each week, we tell the story of words and expressions used in American English. Let's say someone believes in something with all their heart and soul. That something can be a social cause, a political movement, or the person in charge. If they are so wrapped up in the cause, movement, or person to the point where they are unable to think for themselves, we say they have drunk the Kool-Aid. But what is Kool-Aid, and how does drinking it relate to brainwashing? Kool-Aid is a flavored sweet drink that was once very popular with American children. However, to drink the Kool-Aid is to accept the beliefs of another person or organization completely. This expression comes from a very dark, disturbing event that happened in 1978. An American named Jim Jones was operating a utopian community in Guyana, South America, called Jonestown. But according to former members and eyewitnesses, Jonestown was not a utopia. It was a cult and a prison. Members were not allowed to leave, nor were they fed properly. And Jones claimed the role of father figure over everyone. Former members of the cult who managed to escape asked the U.S. government to get involved. So U.S. Congressman Leo Ryan and several journalists went to Guyana to investigate. At the airport, as the group was preparing to leave, a cult member shot at the group. On the runway, he killed Ryan, several journalists, and a fleeing cult member. Before the U.S. government could act, Jim Jones asked his followers to kill themselves by drinking a sweet, flavored beverage. The drink contained poison. More than 900 of his followers drank it, some willingly, some forced. The massacre led to the expression, "Don't drink the Kool-Aid." As a historical note, the beverage that contained the poison was not actually Kool-Aid, but another similar brand called Flavor-Aid. This detail, however, does not change the expression. nor does its terrible origin stop people from using it. In fact, in 2012, editors at Forbes included Drink the Kool-Aid in that magazine's list of most annoying business jargon. I'm Ana Mateo.
Thanks, Ana. Now we present The Making of a Nation. Steve Ember is here to tell us about the presidential election of 1988.
Ronald Reagan was finishing his second term. He was America's 40th president and one of the most popular. During his 8 years in office, many Americans did well financially. Many felt more secure about the future of the nation and the world. The possibility of nuclear war with the Soviet Union did not seem as great a threat as it had in the past. The Constitution limits presidents to 2 terms. So in 1988, the country prepared to elect a new chief executive. There were 3 main candidates for the Republican Party nomination. They were George Herbert Walker Bush, Bob Dole, and Pat Robertson. Bush had just served 8 years as Reagan's vice president. Dole was the top Republican in the Senate. Robertson was a conservative Christian who had his own television program. Ronald Reagan's popularity helped George Bush gain the Republican nomination. Neither Dole nor Robertson won enough votes in the primary election season to be a threat. Bush was nominated on the first vote at the party convention. The delegates accepted his choice for Vice President Senator Dan Quayle of Indiana. 8 candidates competed for the nomination of the Democratic Party. One of the candidates was Jesse Jackson, a black minister and political activist. He won about 25% of the delegates. He had also sought the nomination 4 years earlier. The Democrats chose Michael Dukakis, the governor of Massachusetts. His running mate was Senator Lloyd Benson of Texas. In public opinion surveys, Dukakis looked like a strong candidate after the party conventions. But then he began to lose popularity. Many observers said he had waited too long to launch a nationwide campaign. The candidates heavily attacked each other through campaign advertising on television. Dukakis came under attack from the Bush campaign, targeting his record as governor. Campaign ads said Dukakis had not been tough enough with criminals.
Bush and Dukakis on crime. Bush supports the death penalty for first-degree murderers. Dukakis not only opposes the death penalty, he allowed first-degree murderers to have weekend passes from prison. One was Willie Horton, who murdered a boy in a robbery, stabbing him 19 times. Despite a life sentence, Horton received 10 weekend passes from prison. Horton fled, kidnapped a young couple, stabbing the man and repeatedly raping his girlfriend. Weekend prison passes. Dukakis on crime.
Ads by the Bush campaign also said Dukakis would weaken America's military power. And they accused him of not protecting the environment by seeking a permit to dump sewage from Massachusetts off the coast of New Jersey.
The Environmental Protection Agency called Boston Harbor one of the dirtiest harbors in America. But not long ago, Governor Dukakis proposed a way to help clean it up by dumping Massachusetts sewage sludge off the New Jersey shore, just 106 miles from New York. Now Michael Dukakis says he wants to do for America what he's done for Massachusetts. New Jersey can't afford to take that risk.
I'm fed up with it. Never seen anything like it in 25 years of public life.
Dukakis fought back.
George Bush's negative TV ads, distorting my record. Full of lies, and he knows it.
Dukakis accused Bush of not telling the truth truth about his part in the secret sales of arms to Iran to finance Contra rebels in Nicaragua. He also criticized Bush for being part of an administration that reduced social programs.
I must have been living through a different 8 years than the one that the vice president's been living through, because this administration has cut and slashed and cut and slashed programs for children, for nutrition, for the kinds of things that can help these youngsters to live better lives. Has cut federal aid education, has cut Pell Grants and loans to close the door to college opportunity on youngsters all over this country. And that, too, is a major difference between the vice president and me.
In the end, Bush's campaign succeeded in making Dukakis look weak on crime and defense. Dukakis did not help himself with a commercial in which he was looking out of a moving tank while wearing a large helmet. Many people made fun of the ad. On Election Day in November, Bush defeated Dukakis by almost 7 million votes. George Bush was sworn into office on January 20, 1989.
No president, no government can teach us to remember what is best in what we are. But if the man you have chosen to lead this government can help make a difference, if he can celebrate the quieter, deeper successes that are made not of gold and silk, but of better hearts and finer souls, if he can do these things, then he must. We as a people have such a purpose today. It is to make kinder the face of the nation and gentler the face of the world. My friends, we have work to do.
George Bush was the son of a United States senator and had led a life of public service. He joined the Navy when America entered World War II. He flew attack planes. He was just 18 years old, at that time the youngest pilot the Navy ever had. He flew many bombing raids against the Japanese in the Pacific. He was shot down once and rescued by an American submarine. George Bush came home from the war as a hero. He became a university student and got married. He and his wife, Barbara, then moved to Texas, where he worked in the oil business. He ran for the United States Senate in 1964 and lost. 2 years later, he was elected to the House of Representatives. He ran for the Senate again in 1970 and lost again. But by that time, he had gained wider recognition. Over the next 8 years, he was appointed to a series of government positions. He was ambassador to the United Nations. He was chairman of the Republican National Committee. He was America's representative in China before the two countries had diplomatic relations. And he was head of the Central Intelligence Agency. In 1980, Bush ran against Ronald Reagan for the Republican nomination for president. Bush lost, but became Reagan's running mate. After two terms as vice president, he felt ready to lead the nation himself. The new president took 7 foreign trips during his first year in office. In Europe, Bush met with the other leaders of NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. He proposed a major agreement on reducing troops and non-nuclear weapons in Europe. The Soviet Union considered his proposal an important step in the right direction. In June of 1989, the Chinese government sent tanks and troops to crush pro-democracy protests in Tiananmen Square in Beijing. Hundreds and perhaps thousands of demonstrators were killed.
President Bush took some steps against China, but many critics felt the sanctions were not strong enough. In Central and Eastern Europe, communist governments also faced protests. Since 1987, Soviet leader Mikhail Gorbachev had let countries in the Warsaw Pact experiment with political and economic reforms. But those reforms were not enough to stop the fall of communist governments in one country after another. In the summer of 1989, President Bush visited Hungary and Poland. Both nations were trying to develop free market economies. Both were suffering as they moved away from central control.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
In Poland, the leader of the Solidarity Trade Union, Lech Wałęsa, led the push for reform. He would later become president of a democratic Poland.
Hier ist das erste deutsche Fernsehen mit der Tagesschau.
November of 1989 brought a dramatic expression of the changes taking place in Eastern Europe.
Guten Abend, meine Damen und Herren.
On November 9th, East Germany opened the wall that had divided it from the West since 1961.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight with Peter Jennings, reporting tonight from Berlin.
From the Berlin Wall specifically, take a look at them. They've been there since last night. They are here in the thousands. They are here in the tens of thousands. Occasionally they shout, Die Mauer muss weg, the wall must go. Thousands and thousands of West Germans come to make the point that the wall has suddenly become irrelevant. Something, as you can see, almost a party on. How do you measure such an astonishing moment in history? The East German government said tonight they were going to make more openings in the wall, at least a dozen more, put bulldozers right through the wall so that more people could cross to the West. The East German communist leadership tonight said there'd be a new election law guaranteeing secret elections which the rest of the world could monitor. And only 24 hours after East Germans were told they could go anywhere, anytime, the Soviet Union said, that was a sensible move.
Within days, citizens and soldiers began tearing down the wall as the world watched with hope for a new era of peace.
Now, what's it feel like to be standing on top of the wall?
It's incredible for me. I can't describe really my feelings. It's something unreal for me.
If there is someone who sleeps for 8 weeks and you told him what happened here, he thinks you're crazy. It's unthinkable.
The fall of the Berlin Wall pointed to the end of the Soviet Union, the end of communist rule in most of the countries in the former Soviet bloc, and the end of more than 40 years of a Cold War between the East and West. The presidency of George Herbert Walker Bush will be remembered as the time during which these world-changing events took place, as well as the beginning of the Persian Gulf War with Iraq following Iraq's invasion of Kuwait. We will look at those and other events in the Bush presidency, both at home and abroad, next Sunday on Learning English. Well, that's our program for today. For all of us here at VOA Learning English, thanks for spending some time with us today. I hope you'll join us tomorrow for another Learning English program from the Voice of America.